Nicolet Bank is honored to support all who strive to make communities great.
Newsmakers is a production of Wisconsin Eye. To keep programs like this free and accessible to all, please consider a charitable gift to wisi.org/donate or text WISI to 44321. This program is brought to you from Wisconsin Eye's Margaret Farrow Studio.
Hello and welcome to Newsmakers. I'm your host, Lisa Pugh. The status of Wisconsin's correction system is shaping up to be a major theme in the next biennial budget and legislative session. At recent informational hearings, inmate families and staff shared serious concerns about an overcrowded system that has led to deaths. Here on Newsmakers, we are joined by Democrat Representative Evan Goyke, a member of the Assembly Corrections Committee, and Republican Representative Mark Bourne, co-chair of the Joint Finance Committee. Welcome to you both.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks for having us.
I'd like to start by giving you both a chance to talk about kind of your experience and interest in criminal justice reform and corrections. It's not necessarily an issue that a lot of legislators gravitate to. Why have you been a leader in this area?
Well, thanks for having us. You're right. This isn't necessarily a top three issue that you see on the little placards going out in the mail today. My background and interest stems from my career as a state public defender in Milwaukee County, a 2009 graduate from Marquette Law School. I worked as a state public defender up until my election in 2012, and it's an issue that really my community confronts. We have a high crime rate and a high incarceration rate. We see the racial disparities in our criminal justice system firsthand, and so back home it is something in Milwaukee that is talked about on a daily basis.
Representative Bourne, you actually worked in the corrections field, right?
Yeah, I guess in a prior life, you say, maybe before the legislature, but I spent about 15 years working for the Dodge County Sheriff's Department in the corrections division there in the county jail. And so certainly have that experience in that very difficult industry to work in. And then when I came to the legislature, I actually never had prisons in my district until the recent redistricting, but they were all very close by, had a lot of employees. And so started working on public safety stuff and correction stuff when I got here. And now with the district change, I have three adult prisons and a center and a couple of prison farms and stuff all within the district.
So this past year, there have been numerous inmate deaths. There was just a fifth one last week. There's an ongoing federal investigation. The state is under a federal consent decree at Lincoln Hills after a youth counselor was killed last June. Given all of that, Representative Bourne, I'll start with you. What kind of grade would you give Wisconsin's correction system today?
Yeah, I think when you're talking about something as large as the Department of Corrections and all of the major different divisions and work that goes on there, it's really hard to grade something with that size. I mean, you mentioned a handful of things there, but you're talking about, I think, about 20 adult prisons, several juvenile facilities, several works, and probably I think almost another 20 work centers. You've got the community correction stuff with probation and parole. And, you know, overall, we've got a lot of those are functioning well. We have a lot of good employees working there, doing their job, running safe, secure prisons. We don't have people escaping, you know, on a regular basis or anything like that. And so certainly things are going well or appropriately in large parts of it. But then you have some really areas of major breakdown, major problems. Some of them you just mentioned, you know, lead into that question. Obviously, there's way more work to be done there. So, you know, those would be, you know, probably failing grades on those specific incidences, certainly. But overall, these are tough jobs. They're an important part of our public safety system. And most of it functions appropriately, safely, with constitutional protections and things of that nature.
Representative Goyke, would you agree on that grade?
Yeah, I'm going to agree on the non-grade. You have two politicians, so you're not going to get a letter grade from either of us. Because what Representative Bourne is saying is true. It's a massive entity, 10,000 employees, 22,000 individuals in our care, 60-some thousand under supervision, plus the juvenile side of things, and also individuals presenting with incredibly complex and difficult issues to treat, substance use disorder, mental health, challenges, the staffing issues that we've experienced. So no administration, no term is free. No Department of Corrections is scandal or incident free. I think you grade on the response. And this summer, I think we've seen a good response from the Department of Corrections, cooperating with the justice system, having prosecutions in place so that justice for the victims of these crimes are achieved, and making changes in leadership where appropriate. And the new leaders, whether it's from a warden's perspective at one institution or the new secretary designee, you know, we're seeing action, hands-on leadership, and that's the appropriate response.
We mentioned federal investigation, one ongoing now at Waupun Correctional, related to smuggling by corrections officers. In June, criminal charges brought before the warden, or including the warden and eight employees, related to two inmate deaths. What's the status that you know of for that investigation currently?
Yeah, they're both working through their process, and certainly, you know, one's a federal investigation. The FBI is certainly not updating us on that. And then the other is in the court process, and you know, that was mentioned, working its way through the criminal justice system, and you know, that'll have its day in court and work through that. I think it's just important that when there's a problem like this, when there's, you know, criminal activity, that it be addressed, and I think it is being addressed both by a local investigations, federal investigations, now the court process. It's the exception, not the rule. Most of the staff are doing a good job and properly doing their jobs to run these facilities. And when there's a problem, it definitely needs to be handled. And I think more of this was done by local authorities and the feds than it was by DOC leadership. But DOC has been cooperating and hopefully doing the things that they need to learn from this and to avoid this type of incident in the future.
Representative Goyke, what do you think is at the core of the problems at Waupun Correctional?
Well, you have, a perfect storm there. I don't think that we can ignore the realities of that facility. It's unique in its age and how it's built. We want to have a modern prison in an antiquated physical building or buildings. As Representative Bourne was talking about his area, we do have a saturation of correctional facilities in the area. So, you know, I think five or six that are easily drivable from the Waupun area. And so if the conditions are worse at one and you can, you know, move laterally to another, I think that happens. And then you've had overcrowding and then it's also a maximum. And so the type of individual that's in our care in that facility is there on a different type of crime. They present different types of needs. And again, if you have the ability to go to a less crowded, more modern, medium facility 10 minutes away versus the maximum, it might be a better quality of life. And so it's a combination of all of those things. And, you know, we've seen some progress there. I think the new warden, the reports that I've had, there's been a pretty quick turnaround there, and staffing levels are going in the right direction. We may have more conversation about that on this program. But we do have, at some point, we have to address the elephant, which is this big old, and I mean old, facility that is costing us a lot of money to maintain.
You've blamed Governor Evers for a lack of leadership in protecting the safety of inmates at Waupun Correctional. What did you mean by that? And is this also a problem that the governor says he inherited staffing challenges? Is this something that the previous administration should have been dealing with?
Well, I would say not just in protecting inmates, but protecting the staff and ultimately the public as well. And certainly some of it, I'm sure, was inherited. I mean, as everything that Representative Goyke just said is true about the difficulties of running an older facility like that, the staffing challenges, are certainly no secret about that. But the reality is that it starts at the top. And some of the blame has to be certainly with the Department of Corrections, from the secretary right down through the leadership to the wardens, through the leadership below the warden in the facility, to allow the type of things that happen in those criminal complaints. There was something wrong with the culture there. I mean, I feel like I can speak to that directly as someone that used to run a detention facility. I ran third shift for 12 years for the Sheriff's Department in a 500-bed detention facility. So I've been in a similar position to those wardens and those security directors, where you have to have your staff have to be trained, they have to be following your policies, and if they don't, it puts everyone, the inmates, the staff, and sometimes even the public at risk. And the things that we saw in those criminal complaints, there was a complete breakdown of some of that following of the law and their training. And that has to start at the top. And so that's why I was critical of that. Now, is every bit of that on the governor and DOC? No, but they play a role in the leadership of that, along with all of the stuff that's already been mentioned, the facility, the staffing levels. That all plays a role.
Governor Evers deserves some blame for what's going on there?
Well, I think it clearly we had a miscarriage of justice happen. Crime was committed. Somebody lost their life. I think there's responsibility on all sides. I think that the governor has acted appropriately in putting new leadership in place, both at WAPON and at the DOC, as mentioned. And I'm going to grade them on their reaction to the problem. I think that's been swift, and they've done a good job responding. I would applaud the DOC and their new leadership. We had two very long, very emotional hearings, one in the Assembly and one in the Senate. And I think that was very healthy. They came forward and didn't hide that they made that errors were made, that this culture existed and that it needs to be cleaned up, and I applaud them for that transparency and for staying and listening. And I think there was a lot of healing that happened and a lot of learning that happened in that process. It's not an easy room to walk into knowing you're going to get bombarded for 6-7 hours in a row, and they did that, and that's important.
Let's talk about an area of bipartisan agreement. There were new pay raises put in place for corrections officers last year. They've been in place for a little over a year now, and they are having an impact on staffing vacancy rates. We're going to show you a chart with the vacancies from 2018 until now. The line started trending down pretty dramatically last fall. The overall vacancy rate across all institutions is down to 12.5%. Two of the six maximum security facilities still have a vacancy rate over 20%. Green Bay is down to 15.5% vacancy. Dodge is at 26.2%, and WAPON is down, but still at 41.7%. Do you consider that a success?
Yeah, it's definitely moving in the right direction. It's having some of the desired effect that we'd hoped it would. It's certainly not done. You know, we can't rest on our laurels or take a victory lap or anything, but certainly having a good impact. As I'm talking to folks that work in those prisons in my area, WAPON obviously is still one of the exceptions, but talking to folks at Fox Lake and Dodge, they're seeing a major difference. They're seeing their overtime reduced quite a bit. They are a little cautious because it's a lot of new staff and a lot of folks that we need to see. You know, they've done the training, now they're learning in the facilities. We got to see how long, if they decide to stay with those careers, you know, how that stuff all works out. That's going to take some time, but at least initially a very positive impact on getting more folks working in our state prisons.
What more should be done for corrections staff?
Well, I mean, again, this was an area of some bipartisan agreement from the last budget, and I would agree in the assessment that it's had a really positive result. And one, what we heard a lot from staff was just the quality of life reduction when you have forced overtime and you're called the day before your kid's baseball game that you got to go in and work again the second, third, fourth day in a row. And that was really affecting attrition rates and retention rates. And so just the ease of the burden of having these additional folks in uniform in the institutions will have, I'm optimistic that it will have this continued paying benefit. I think the legislature and the administration need to just take a global look at where we stand and where we're going for the next 10 to 20 years. We need to articulate a vision for what our prisons will look like, not just today, but what are they going to look like in 10 years? What is our portfolio? You know, how much money are we spending? What's the ROI that we're getting? And, you know, as something I've worked on during my time in the legislature is looking at other states around us that have had successful bipartisan prison reform initiatives. Where can we be more efficient? Where can we make smarter choices that save us money and deal with some of the aging infrastructure that we have?
Do you see more pay raises in the future in the next biennial budget, or will there be any other initiatives that support staff?
Yeah, I think we'll continue to look at that. I mean, you're not going to see a jump of the size of this, but we'll look at to make sure that we're competitive. I think we learned that we need to do a better job of staying on top of that so we don't fall behind again. At least I hope that's what the legislature learned in this. And I think we'll have to look at some of the other folks that work in our prisons to make sure that we're competitive with teachers and support staff and things like that as well.
We've talked a little bit about this in our conversation, that many of our facilities are over capacity and have been for years across all of Wisconsin's 37 correctional facilities. Levels there are currently, 22,696 adults incarcerated. The three largest maximum security facilities are Dodge, Waupun, and Green Bay Correctional. Dodge is at 500 inmates over capacity. Waupun is under capacity, but as we just said, has a significant staffing vacancy rate. Green Bay is 300 inmates over capacity. You know, Representative Bourne, Wisconsin is often studied and compared to other states. In those recent informational hearings, people brought up Minnesota. They incarcerate one-third of the number of people that we do here in Wisconsin. Do we simply have too many people in our corrections system?
Well, we definitely have a lot of folks in there. I think there's a balance always between public safety and the right systems for reducing recidivism and things like that. I think when you look at some of these other states, some of the things that they've done that they called their reforms and maybe reduced their prison population by like 10% are work programs similar to ones that we already have, or they are focusing on things like drug courts. I know one of the southern states did that. Well, we already have those as well. So we can look at new ways to do some of that, but we're already doing some of that. And I think it just comes to a balance between public safety, and you just cited their maximum security prisons. We're going to need those no matter what type of reforms we do on nonviolent criminals and things like that, because that's not who's in a maximum security prison. Those are folks that have committed really serious crimes and need to be kept there for public safety. So we shouldn't pretend that we're not going to need those type of facilities regardless of what type of reforms we talk about.
Representative Goyke, I know you've advocated for criminal justice reform initiatives, one of them being crimeless revocation reform to that process, which provides alternatives to re-imprisonment to people who have violated some of their conditions of supervision. Can you explain what a reform in that would look like?
Sure. So when an individual in Wisconsin, when an individual is sentenced to prison under the law, they have a portion of their sentence in custody and a portion out of custody. We call it a bifurcated sentence. They have to do both. And this is really targeting the release and then supervision. And when they get out, they have to sign rules, at least 18, or they're getting amended, so maybe fewer. And agents can add or judges can add rules. And what happens if they're found to be in violation of those rules is the Department of Corrections may respond by reincarcerating this, kind of this revocation system. Well, some of the individuals that are returned to prison are accused of minor status offenses. We had a hearing a couple of years ago about this bill, and a gentleman came back and he was reincarcerated for 18 months because during a search they found a bottle of alcohol in his house. It's not that he was drunk. It's not that he, you know, did something while intoxicated. There was a bottle of liquor in his house that was against his rules, so he went to prison for 18 months because he was on supervision for something else. And during that time, he lost his business. Their employees lost his job, and he really struggled. We weren't made safer because of that decision to reincarcerate him. You know, we paid a lot of money to do that, and it's a system that needs a lot of review and accountability and transparency.
Do we know how many people that might impact?
Thousands. It is, if you look at the Department of Corrections dashboards, and the DOC has done a good job of putting data on their website, they track the reasons why people are sent to prison, and historically, year after year, that revocation number is the highest. The crimeless revocations are a subset of that population, so it's not all 3,000 or 3,500 returning, but I think we could very easily target several hundred. And just in that metric alone, just in reducing a couple hundred readmissions to prison, we would stop the growth.
Is crimeless revocation an area that Republicans are interested in working on?
I think to some degree, but I think it's exaggerated how much that would actually impact things. And I'm not as familiar with the recent data. Obviously, it was 12 years ago that I was working at Dodge County. But in my experience in that time, people were brought into the jail oftentimes for a weekend for violating those kind of rules to kind of get them to a little wake up, hope that they would, you know, get on the straight and narrow, focus on their work. They weren't being fully revoked and sent back to prison for minor things like that. If they were, it was because they were violating those things time after time. You know, they were bringing them in every weekend for a violation for months, and they just weren't going with the program. And if you've got someone that's having that much disrespect for their supervision, for their part of their sentence outside, it makes you wonder what their ability is going to be to really follow the laws and you know, return to the normal work life and things. And so I think it's something that once in a while you find a good example of it, and then it gets exaggerated.
Maybe not a solution that's going to help with the overcrowding.
At least not a big one.
You've both mentioned this to a certain degree, that the age of the maximum secure facilities is a problem. Waupun was built in the 1850s, Green Bay built in the 1890s. The 2020 DOC Master Facilities Analysis and Report was started under the Walker administration and identified significant mechanical, electrical, and other structural issues at Green Bay Correctional, which was considered a priority facility to replace. They cited plumbing system leaks, lack of fire sprinklers, poor ventilation, a security wall in need of repair. It said most of the facility was inaccessible and didn't comply with standards for prisoner safety and humane treatment. Again, this report from 2020 was recommending facility replacement. Is it potential that there'll be funding for a new prison in the next biennial budget?
It's definitely a possibility. It's been talked about for several cycles now. They're very expensive to build. But there is a lot of reasons to, and you just cited a bunch of them, and we mentioned some of them earlier about the ways to run a modern, safe correctional facility. It's pretty tough to do in those old buildings. So I think we're going to have to continue to have those discussions. I'd certainly like to see a new state-of-the-art maximum security prison built in Waupun. I think we have to figure out what we're going to do with that old facility. And so if we can either renovate that there or use some of the other land that the state owns. The state owns a lot of land around those prisons as well as the state farm. So we could build a modern facility, close both the Green Bay and Waupun older facilities, run it safer and cheaper with fewer staff.
Some of the estimates for a new prison, $1 billion. Is that a good use of state surplus funding?
No, and we don't need to build a new one in general. If we were to be serious about engaging in justice reform, I think one of the things we ought to do prior to building a new facility and spending hundreds of millions of dollars is know what our numbers are. What's the track? Where will we be in 10 years? So this was actually, and I think we can talk about juvenile justice as well. You know, you design the system and you come out with what the outputs are, and then you build the system to address those outputs. You don't build the prisons and then go back and say, okay, well, now what are we going to do if we have too many or too few? If you build it, you'll fill it. And so what I'd really love to see prior to building or allocating that much money is engaging in a study of what we're doing, where could we be more efficient, where could we reform, how could we safely reduce our numbers so that we're not building facilities that we don't need. And in terms of a new facility, the plan has always been, since we collaborated years ago on the Lincoln Hills legislation, close Lincoln Hills as a juvenile facility, use it as an adult facility, which would relieve capacity issues at other facilities, potentially free up a wing or a path of an existing prison that could be modified to house maximum inmates rather than building a new one from scratch.
Governor Evers continues to talk about that too. He wants to use Lincoln Hills as a place for adult inmates. Is that still on the table?
Yeah, I think it definitely is, but it's going to be a minimum or at most medium security, most likely minimum security facility. And that's what everything he just said where it misses the point is what I've said a couple times already today is we will need maximum security space. There are going to be violent criminals that need to be secured in maximum security space. And that's why I suggested building a new maximum security prison and closing two of our old ones.
Governor Evers says he won't do that unless there's big criminal justice reform overall, similar to what Representative Goyke's been talking about. Is there a potential for compromise with the governor on getting a new prison built?
There's certainly the ability to talk about reform, but again, the reform will not touch the inmates that I'm talking about that need to be in a max. You're not going to reduce your maximum security bed need. You might reduce some of your minimum security or some of your work center need, and that's fine. That's great. That would be excellent to be able to move in that direction if the opportunity is there. But we need to stop pretending that we're talking about two different parts of a, like we started out in this conversation, very big criminal system in our prisons. And reforms are certainly something that can be talked about. They have to be balanced with public safety. But we shouldn't pretend that we don't need better state-of-the-art maximum security prisons that we can run safer for cheaper.
And Lisa, nobody on my side of the aisle is saying that we just eliminate maximum security facilities. The argument is that if you relieve capacity issues in a medium facility, it is cheaper to intensify the security at an existing medium facility, say a wing of Fox Lake, than it is to build an entire new maximum security facility from scratch. And the efficiencies that you get from reform in lowering the numbers provides that type of ease on the capacity. So it really isn't, there's no one saying that we won't have maximum. It's how do we most efficiently build the maximum beds that we need? And what is that number?
In the Assembly Corrections Committee, they had an informational hearing a few weeks ago. A lot of themes were from the testifiers about a need for increased oversight of the Department of Corrections. Mm-hmm. I know you've also talked about a need for increased oversight. What does that look like?
Well, we don't know for sure what it looks like yet. We just started having these discussions, but Michael Schrau and I have started talking about next session bringing forward some legislation. And right now we're thinking about creating something that I'm familiar with from my time working in the county jail, where there's a state jail inspection office at DOC that inspects all of the county jails to make sure that you're complying with state statute and administrative code and constitutional protections. And so I think we're going to try to develop something similar to that that will have the same type of oversight at the Department of Corrections. And, you know, we certainly viewed it in my time working in the facility as an opportunity. When the inspectors came in, it was an opportunity for us to show, you know, what we were doing, how we were changing our policies to improve our facility, our training, things like that. And sometimes they would find things that were, you know, not quite the way they should be. And that was an opportunity then too to improve and correct and have a better run, safer facility. And so we viewed it as a partnership, and I think that we need to find a way to bring that type of collaboration with some sort of oversight to our state facilities as well.
Oversight, independent oversight, would you support that?
Sure, and we can, you know, argue about the details, but having sat through that hearing, I think it's important to mention that many of the issues that the staff brought up were once served by public sector unions where they could have a place and a venue to air grievances in the workplace, and that they could be represented in bringing those grievances forward. You heard from many former and current staff the imbalance of power when an individual employee was seeking some kind of change in the workplace, alone and unrepresented versus the administration. And somewhat similarly, you know, I'll wait to see what the details are, although I'll be a private citizen at that point. I'll come and testify just for fun. But, you know, where are the voices of the family members of those that are in our care in that process? And so we had two sides.
You're talking about an ombudsman in the hearing.
Right. That word was used, that vision of family members being able to advocate for the loved ones that are incarcerated. You know, my legislative office receives a lot of mail and calls, and it's hard. It's difficult to keep up with the issues that are faced by a number of individuals and their family members. They don't know where to turn to or who to turn to. And so that was certainly a concept that I would get behind, but of course the details are critically important.
I'd like to shift our conversation to Lincoln Hills. The Senate Committee on Judiciary and Public Safety had a really emotional hearing last week, a lot of people talking about the death of that youth counselor there back in June. There's been a lot of anger and finger pointing over what happened at Lincoln Hills and also why it's taking so long to kind of act on the plan to build additional facilities and move youth closer to home. Do you think it's taking too long to get youth out of that facility?
Yeah, it's certainly been taking longer than we wanted it to. It's been a very difficult, complex process. Most of that lies with the administration. Both DOC and DOA have had their struggles with trying to find sites to build the Type 1 facilities, which was a key part of closing Lincoln Hills. Certainly, we also had struggles working with our county partners and trying to build some of the CERCES. That was also part of what was needed to close that. So it's been much slower than I think we all hoped when we were working on the to begin with. But the legislature really has been very responsive. It's not what you'd hear in the rhetoric from the administration, but you know, as I look back over time, we've had to adjust funding quite a few times at the committee level, and we've done that. We've had to increase funding then in budgets because of the rising cost of these facilities, and we've done that. I heard from that hearing that they were critical that we haven't funded the facility they want to put in Dane County, but you know, they didn't even have the place identified when in the last budget. It was at the very end of the budget process that they mentioned that they were looking at Dane County. When they made the request in the capital budget, it said statewide. So they didn't even have the details in the plans.
And so, for a Dane County facility potentially in the next budget?
Yeah, I think if they're ready to go, that was what I told the Secretary Carr at the time of completing that budget, is that we're going to give you the money to do the planning so that it doesn't slow you down at all. But by their own schedule in that capital budget request, they are not putting a shovel in the ground until into the second year of the next budget. So they didn't need the funding at this point. And I said, so here's the planning money, keep planning, we'll stay on your timetable, your chosen timetable by DOA and DOC in that request, and we can certainly fund it in this next budget, I think, if they are prepared to move forward. But if it's another situation like it has been in the past where they were trying to find sites in the Milwaukee region and they couldn't find one, eventually they got one that worked, they were trying to find sites in the Fox Valley and having problems up there. And so really it's been, you know, the delay in their ability to find places to build these facilities.
You've been working on this issue since 2017. Is it a little frustrating that it's not going to happen by the time you leave the legislature?
Yeah, it's frustrating. I have a, you know, slightly different memory of the history than Representative Bourne. The legislature did object a few times. Yeah, the legislative Republicans were for it and against it, and the Senate was against it and then for it, and the Assembly, it's been awful. It's been a good case study for some political science class on how an issue gets lost in the partisan back and forth. As I'm leaving the legislature, I just hope it gets done. I'm glad that we have a site in Milwaukee. I think as of August 9, the last Friday count, there are 42 boys at Lincoln Hills. That facility once, you know, has a capacity, I think, of over 500 beds. It is time that it be closed and done as a juvenile facility, and we can begin again. I'll just mention this in Act 185 from 2017. The dominoes were to be, that it would be an adult facility, and then we would, you know, we'd start those dominoes of how we could address capacity and overcrowding in the adult system. If we would have just gotten it done on time, this interview would have been totally different, because we'd be talking about closing Waupun and Green Bay in the forefront rather than, you know, in the next decade.
As we end our interview, do you both agree that there still is strong bipartisan support to closing Lincoln Hills Copper Lake?
I definitely think there is. I don't even remember what the Assembly Republican objections have been over the years that Representative Goyke just mentioned. We've been moving, like I said, along the process. I know we've worked on changes to the funding back when Nygren and Alberta Darling were still the co-chairs, but I was working on the projects. We've done a lot of things along the way under two administrations now. I think maybe that was some of the problem too. You know, this started under Governor Walker. You get a change in administration, they've got to get, you know, new folks appointed and things caught up and decide what direction they want to go. I'm sure that was part of the delay as well.
But you're confident it's going to happen?
Yeah, I think it's happening. It's just there's been roadblocks along the way, most of it from the executive branch and their ability to execute, you know, those things that needed to be done to build the facilities and things. But they're moving along, and I continue to see support in our caucus.
Strong bipartisan support, same?
I think so. Roadblocks to build the facility being the money that you guys took years to approve. But it's in the law that facility is going to close, and it will become an adult facility. It says that in state statute. That's what we worked on years ago. It's a matter of when, not if, and we just need to keep focusing on that future.
All right. We will end on that point. Thank you both for joining us today.
Thanks for having us.
And thank you to the viewers of Newsmakers. Be sure to tune in again as we highlight the issues and sit down with the decision makers who make a difference for all of us.
Nicolet Bank is honored to support all who strive to make communities great. You have been watching a production of Wisconsin Eye, your unfiltered window into legislative deliberations and public policy programming, where our mission is to provide Wisconsinites an opportunity to access the legislative process and connect with conversations that inform our citizenry. Please consider supporting our mission, and thank you for watching. Wisconsin Eye, policy made public.